Welcome to Leaders and Legends of Online Learning, a podcast dedicated to the experts. Thank you for listening. Each episode, we'll be learning from the world's leading thinkers and practitioners in online learning and linking to ideas relevant to online teaching, working with online learners, and digital education. You can listen to the experts and check their profiles and link to some of their work on our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com. I'm Mark Nichols, the interviewer in this episode. You'll meet Mary Burgess in this episode. Mary is Executive Director of BC Campus in Canada. She has a broad practitioner's experience as an online student, instructional designer, online teacher, and now a virtual campus manager. Mary and I talked via Skype. Well, I'm glad to be talking with Mary Burgess, Executive Director of BC Campus in Canada. Mary has substantial experience as an educational designer and in representing open education and also open textbooks. Mary, thanks for making the time to talk.
I'm super happy to be here.
Wonderful, thanks. Mary, can we start with a brief overview of your career and publications?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm not much of a publication person. I'm definitely more, have always been sort of an on the ground doing person versus the research and publication angle, and have at times tried to write about what I'm doing, but it never seems to take precedence. So I got into this work about 20 years ago as a technical support person. I was working at the University of Victoria at that time, and I was working with instructional designers who were providing distributed learning courses, and that seemed really interesting to me. And so that led me into doing a master's degree and becoming an instructional designer myself and working on ed tech projects and leading a center and then moving over to BC Campus. So I feel like I come by this all very honestly because I actually did print correspondence in high school in the 80s. Yeah. And I did my master's degree all online through UBC, through their Master of Educational Technology program. So I feel like I have both the training and the lived experience in this area.
Brilliant. So you're obviously now manager of BC Campus. So you've progressed up through the ranks, starting as an educational designer. Can you tell us a bit about those steps that you took and how your career's progressed?
Yeah, absolutely. So I worked for about 10 years after I became an instructional designer at an institution here in Victoria, BC called Royal Roads University. And they are known very much for their online education that is primarily targeted at mid-career professionals. And so we were at that time designing and developing a host of master's level programs for online that were supplemented with residencies of a couple of weeks. So I really got deeply into both the practice and theory of learning communities being built online at that time. And so, you know, people like Paloff and Pratt building learning communities in cyberspace and things like that were really seminal works for us at that time. And, you know, we had websites with PDFs on them, and that was the course and things like that. And so kind of working through that to, you know, working on some educational technology projects. We did a big implementation of the Moodle learning management system back in 2005 that I led, and just kind of got more and more deeply involved in that. And then ultimately became the director of the Teaching and Learning Center at Royal Roads for about 4 or 5 years. And then an opportunity came up at BC Campus to lead some open education initiatives that I was really interested in because I'd been doing some open education work through my master's and had started an initiative at Royal Roads around sharing some of the work that we were doing there. And so I was really excited to come to BC Campus and be able to do that work more full time. And then when David Porter, the executive director, left about 4 years ago, I guess, I took over as the executive director of the organization. It all seems so easy when you talk about it like that.
It sounds like a red carpet was rolled out for you, doesn't it?
Exactly. Just so done.
You, You would have noticed some really important changes in instructional design and educational design over that 20-year period. I mean, obviously, Absolutely. The online environment came to the fore. Can you perhaps describe how you perhaps thought about instructional design or educational design back then and how it's actually morphed to what it is at the moment at BC Campus?
Yeah, you bet. I think it really, the way we think about it has really changed. I think, I mean, one thing many of us have worked on for many of years in this space is the role of technology and making online learning be about the learning and not about the technology and being seamless in that way. But back in those days, in the early 2000s, it was very difficult to make technology seamless. And so a lot of the design was really centered around a small set of tools, mostly online discussion forums, and not a lot of other work. And we had never heard of open educational resources at that time either. And so, as I say, you know, we were putting PDFs up onto websites that kind of amounted to lecture notes. And I think what we thought at that time was that it was really great because we were allowing people from rural and remote communities to take part in education in ways that they hadn't been able to otherwise, or people who didn't have sort of the ability to go to school from, you know, during the day, during the week, they had jobs and things like that. But I think what we've come to more now that we're actually doing some research around this at BC Campus is it's great that we were looking at that from the perspective of rural and remote learners. Over those couple of decades, though, we've left out a lot of people, a lot of different groups who don't have equitable access to education and for whom the implementation of technology is not going to solve the problem. And so I think that's where we're looking at it differently from that perspective now. And, you know, we for example, just we'll do big projects at BC Campus. So we did a big project a year or two ago, creating a bunch of indigenization guides for a broad learning context, all the way to we have a little program called Facilitating Learning Online, and we do, in addition to a longer 5-week course, we do 1-week snippets. And one we did recently was about doing Indigenous welcomes and acknowledgements in an online learning space. And so we're thinking pretty differently about who is learning for and who are we leaving out than we traditionally did, I think, with online learning. And I think because of that, it has much greater potential than it really ever has. And it sort of felt like it kind of went away a little bit in between those two spaces in terms of the importance that it was taking up in post-secondary education for us.
Yeah. So accessibility then seems to be one of the major themes that you're working toward at the moment. Now, is Absolutely. That accessibility in terms of having the right level of education to start with, or are you providing online as well as offline access to education opportunities for students?
We do both. So our work is primarily with faculty. So our work is really around helping faculty be better educators. So, you know, it's the idea of someone will show up to teach at a university with a PhD in chemistry and no learning about how people learn, no learning about how to communicate that learning to other people. They just will teach the way they were taught in all likelihood. And so a lot of the work that we do at BC Campus is around helping with that. So we work with teaching and learning centers in that area as well, across a bunch of different fronts. But I would say in British Columbia in general, and everywhere, I guess, universal design is really starting to underlie a lot of our work. And so coming at everything from that perspective, rather than, you know, we're going to have to retrofit this curriculum afterwards because we didn't think of all of the variety of kinds of people who might want to take that learning. We need to think differently about that, I think, now, and be more on the front end of it.
Absolutely. Mary, you've also had a great deal of involvement with open education, including the OE Consortium. Can you tell us a bit more about that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So this has been my passion for probably about the last 10 years is working in open education. And so I did sit for a while on the board of the Open Education Consortium. I am on the board of the Open Education Foundation with Wayne McIntosh and others. A lot of the work we do at BC Campus is around open education. Our provincial government has made some really big investments that BC Campus is responsible for carrying out on their behalf. And so we work with all of the public post-secondary institutions in British Columbia to help them with open educational practices, everything from creating, adopting, adapting, and using open textbooks to open pedagogy to open scholarship, all kinds of angles. And it's been really exciting and a very quick ride as well.
Yeah, but very interesting too to see the uptake of open education textbooks. I mean, it almost seems as though the time has come after all of the years of promise. It looks as though there's some really good resources available.
I think that's definitely the case. BC Campus worked in open education for a number of years before 2012 when we started working on open textbooks specifically. And although there were seeds planted, the momentum really wasn't there. But once we focused on textbooks, I think that was a place where people could really understand what we were talking about, the cost of textbooks. Everybody knows what a textbook is. Not everybody knows what a curricular resource is. Yeah. And so I think that really got us running. And because there were other big projects happening in North America in particular at the same time, we sort of all built momentum, and we've been collaborating with each other and really seeing a huge amount of uptake over the last several years.
Yeah, I think too, a lot of the CC licensing available now in those textbooks is just CC BY, isn't it? So it's actually quite an open license that people can quite freely reuse these resources and adapt them, use them as they please.
Yeah, absolutely. We made a commitment early on in our project to partners like OpenStax, who were also working in the same way. Anything that we fund to be created out of BC Campus is CC BY, and that's the same for OpenStax. And we just think we want to allow the most flexible use for educators that we possibly can. And so because we're a publicly funded entity and our open projects are publicly funded, we strongly believe that everything that we create should also be publicly available. And so it's actually easier than hiding things behind a paywall anyway. So we just do that, and it seems to work really well.
Brilliant. Mary, you've got a wonderful perspective on online education, I think, at the present time. What observations would you make now? It's mid-2019. What do you think online education is like at the moment?
Well, you know, it's really fascinating. I don't know if you know about the survey that has happened in Canada over the last couple of years.
That was the Tony Bates one.
Exactly, yep. The Tony Bates one. And so BC Campus and eCampus Ontario and a few other partners have been contributing to funding for that because it's so useful for our work as well with the institutions. And so the data from that survey is so fascinating to me because here's what I get from it. We think that online education is very important. We think we need a strategy for it. We don't have one. And we don't think faculty have enough learning in order to be able to do this. So that's what I see when I look at that survey is potential, untapped potential, frankly. And I do think there was a period where online education kind of went away a little bit. And I think that was partly in response to educators who didn't think that it was as good as face-to-face learning. And so it kind of got pushed to the side from a strategic perspective. But I think we're coming back to it now. And I actually think that part of that is because of accessibility and UDL and equity seeking groups who are saying, hey, we need help too. And online education presents some affordances that we don't easily get in other settings. And so I think we're on the precipice of using online education better than we ever have. But we have got some work to do. We really do in terms of strategy, in terms of what credentialing does and could look like, in terms of support for it within institutions, faculty attitudes about it. I definitely think we have some work to do, but as I say, I think the potential is really big right now.
Yeah, so it sounds as though from your perspective, online learning has actually matured quite considerably, but of course we still have some more distance to go.
I think the technology has matured, but I'm actually not sure that the way we teach online has changed that much, or the way we think about online learning has changed that much. So, I mean, I think obviously there are some people who are thinking about this very much and are advancing the work. But I feel like in general, the way online education is being delivered is the way it's being delivered for quite a long time. And it's time to look differently at that. I mean, we don't need 12-week online courses every time we do an online course. You know, we don't have to model the traditional format of learning delivery. And I think it's time to really shake that up and look at what can we do differently? What is actually going to meet student needs? What do they want from online learning? What do employers want us to do? Those kinds of things, I think, are the questions that we need to be looking at.
That's a really interesting observation, because you're right. I think to date, online education, at least in the higher education setting, has had to force itself into the constraints of how we currently operate. So you're right. We do think in terms of 12-week courses, in New Zealand credit values, etc. I'm really interested actually in your educational design background, because you're talking about taking online learning forward. Obviously, someone without a background in education design might have a different view as to what the online world perhaps should look like from a teacher's perspective. How about from your perspective, given your educational design background, what's your vision for how this should unfold?
I mean, I think I am a learning design nerd at heart. And so I definitely, like, I love getting into all the theories and that kind of stuff. I've always loved Vygotsky, and I think that learning from each other is incredibly important. I think there are opportunities for more student agency in online learning that we could take advantage of. And I think I think knowing what we know about how people learn, how communities are developed, and what we've learned maybe from other sectors about how online communities can work could really be applied to educational settings in ways that we're not currently doing, particularly for younger students who've been part of those communities their whole lives. What does that look like to think about that in a different way, or look at things like micro-credentials, that sort of thing? So I am really interested in a solid foundation that is based in evidence, but also being flexible and not being so tied to all of that necessarily, because it is like so much of the other work we do, it's created with by the dominant culture and with the dominant culture in mind. And so I definitely think that we have we need to have a look at some alternatives, for example, indigenous ways of being and knowing, and maybe there are some things to pull from that to make online communities better for learning, or just any of those kinds of things that have kind of come to light, since we've been thinking about online learning, things that are coming to light in post-secondary and K-12 education generally, but are things that we haven't really applied to online learning yet.
Yeah. So there's still quite considerable scope for experimentation, isn't there?
I think definitely there is, yeah.
Brilliant. I'm really curious about how you see TPAC and the faculty role. So you've talked a lot about upskilling faculty and helping them to engage with online teaching. TPAC would imply that there are some more specific areas to do with technology and pedagogical knowledge, which we need to bring faculty up to speed with in order for them to make good use of the online environment. Mm-hmm. So some institutions actually differentiate in, those roles. So they'll have one person responsible for the technology and pedagogy that the subject matter expert or faculty member providing the subject expertise. Can you comment on that in terms of how you see online learning going forward? Should we be empowering faculty to be everything together, or is there a role to play for the specialist as well?
I think there's both. I do think that anybody who is going to teach should have some training in how to teach, and that simply is not happening right now, particularly at big research universities. So I think that's one of the places we need to do stuff. But I do think, and again, if you're going to teach online, you should have some training in how to do that. Do you need to be deeply knowledgeable in all the technologies and have a high level of digital literacy? I don't think so. I think that that institution should be providing that pedagogical expertise through, you know, facilitation and things like that from people like instructional designers and faculty developers. But I do think there's a level of digital literacy that's required that isn't there right now. It's definitely something that we're looking at BC Campus is how do we begin to look at this and how do we get past things like faculty unions who don't want to be told what to do at all. We have a really interesting situation across BC because we have institutions with like three or four different unions in them. Some of those educators are required to get training. Some of them can't be required to get training. So there is a real lack of consistency, I think. But I would love to see institutions taking a stand around, if you're going to teach, you need to get some training. And if you're going to teach online, you need to get even more training. And some of that would be, this is the button you push when you use this technology. And this is why you would use that technology if you had X instructional issue that you were trying to resolve, right? So I think a little bit of both.
Yeah, fair comment. But just on that theme, Mary, if you had an unlimited budget and you could actually authorize the sort of research that you'd most like to see to help you take your work forward, what would you be most interested in reading?
Wow, I think one of the things we're funding in small amounts at BC Campus is faculty risk-taking. So we want people to try things, and we want them to feel supported in trying things that might fail, trying things that might be kind of hard to do, trying things that might just be the thing that sparks it for some students that wouldn't otherwise have been sparked. So I think that's one of the things that I would love to fund is just more of that, more try things, more ways of playing with education and with learning tools. I also would like to see, and we're seeing some of this coming out, again, more research into open pedagogy and the ways in which student agency can come into learning and looking at how the way people are thinking differently and in more diverse ways can be impactful in learning settings. So I think those are some of the things. I want to pay people to play. I want to pay people to learn stuff and fool around and you know, kind of learn lessons with a soft landing.
Fair enough. Actually, can you talk a bit more about open pedagogy? So by giving students agency, what's your actual vision there? What would be the ultimate in terms of an open education experience for students?
I think it's a really interesting question because open pedagogy is not for every setting. I think one of its benefits is allowing students to choose things that interest them and fire them up and allowing them to be contributors and not regurgitators. And so I think what I'd like to see is more opportunities for students to say, you know, I'm interested in this topic, but I'd like to pursue it from this angle, and I would like to show my learning in this other way that isn't the traditional way, and I'd like to help other students, future learners in this course or in this program by creating things that will be of value to them or will be of value to the field. You know, instead of thinking that students are consumers, I'd love it if we could see them more as the contributors that they really are and can be. And I think that would be really beneficial for future students and for educators as well.
So is it almost like a thesis or research project that a student might embark on?
It could be that, and that's certainly sort of the far end of it. I remember when I was at Royal Roads, we had a Masters of Environmental Management program there, and one of the students did a video as her thesis instead of writing a thesis, like a long video, but you know, it was a different way of presenting her learning. And so I think, yes, definitely that, but everything, a lot of things smaller under that as well, right? So maybe we're not all posting two meaningful posts a week in a discussion forum that respond to two other students' posts. Maybe we're creating something that we're sharing. Maybe we're creating a video about something we learned about related to that topic that everybody else in our course is going to see. Or maybe we're writing a blog post in which we're going to interact with experts in the field during our course on that blog or on Twitter things like that. Things that really allow students to become part of the broader community of a given field rather than just in the little microcosm of their course, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there is plenty of scope at the moment in formal education for that, isn't there, in terms of how we put together our assessments, maybe opening it up for students to actually participate in that type of contribution. Even to some extent, the way we prepare our curriculum more generally in terms of learning outcomes, maybe requiring students to stretch themselves a little bit further as learners.
Absolutely. I think if we could get there, that would be fantastic. I see far too many assessments that are a midterm and a final exam, and that's how students show their learning. And I find that incredibly disappointing and unnecessary in terms of the way, in what way does an exam show learning? Students are stressed out, it's time-based, you know, all of the problems with that. I think we can do a lot better than that. So yeah, absolutely. Looking at learning outcomes and thinking, does it really matter how they show me this, that they have these outcomes now, that they've learned these things? How much does it matter the format that comes in? And I think when we start having, rubrics that are really helpful both for educators and for students alike to understand, what do I need to do to show you that I've learned this, and then take it from there in terms of how they actually do that, I think is a really exciting proposition.
Absolutely. Mary, I'm really fascinated by your background and your contribution here. And there will no doubt be people whose work or perspective has influenced you. You've mentioned Palaf and Pratt, I think, already. Mm-hmm. Who are two people you would recommend as legends of online learning?
Yeah, you bet. So the two people that I want to recommend to you are Tricia Donovan, who is the principal at eCampus Nova Scotia, which just started. She used to be the principal at eCampus Alberta for a long time, which was shut down by government a few years ago. She has been working with Tony on the online survey for the last couple of years, and she is deeply experienced in this world, and I think would have a great perspective. Yeah. The other person is Dr. Elizabeth Childs, who is a professor and program head of School of Education and Technology at Royal Roads University. And I've known her since I started there. She was teaching in the Master of Arts in Distributed Learning program when I started at Royal Roads in 2002. And she has worked with students in that program in many different forms since that time, and is really one of the people who I would go to if I wanted to understand how do we apply this theory, you know, that kind of thing. Like, she is really so deeply knowledgeable and so connected to students. And she and her colleague, George Velastianos, have just finished creating that program as what I think might be the first all open graduate program in North America, if not the world. So they're doing some very exciting work there. And I think those two women, they're heroes of mine for sure.
Brilliant. They sound like very good perspectives to follow up on.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've really enjoyed talking with you. Thank you for your perspective. And thank you too for being a leader and legend of online learning.
Well, thanks so much, Mark. It was great to chat with you.
You can learn more about Mary and her work from our website. Her Twitter handle is Mary E. Burgess. That concludes this episode. Be sure to go to our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com, to follow up on this episode's guest. You'll also find links to others whose ideas continue to inspire and teach online learning professionals, and you can subscribe to future interviews. If you know of a leader or legend we've not yet talked to, please do drop us a line at onlinelearninglegends@gmail.com.